This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by PRMIseattle.com, Primary Residential Mortgage. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in the classroom?
Well, it only took really less than 24 hours to see what we say the stupid things, the outrageous things, the annoying things that happen in Seattle have a tendency to spread. Well, it spread to Bellevue today. Yesterday, we told you the story of the Seattle School District. They said that they cannot get enough staff members to have fully functioning schools on Friday. Tomorrow is Veterans Day, and all of these teachers, many of whom are on the left and don't actually care about our military, never have, never will, they get the day off. And as a result, a lot of them decided, hey, you know, I don't want to just take Thursday off, you know, Friday. Let's just make it a four-day weekend, even though they kept kids home from school all year last year and they had plenty of off time. Teachers and other staff members in the Seattle Public School District said, yeah, we're gonna take Friday off too. And as a result, the district couldn't find enough people to step up and fill in. What's weirdly missing from all of the local coverage on this topic is that we also have a substitute teacher problem, and it's driven in part, not entirely, but in part by the vaccine mandate. I've spoken to substitute teachers before the mandate went into effect and said, yeah, they're not going to be able to step into a classroom again. Now, even taking that out of consideration, you have a shortage of substitute teachers in this state. That's why in Tacoma, for example, they're doing so much to try to recruit, including just giving huge bonuses. They need as many bodies as they can. And so after this was announced, Bellevue got into it as well. They said the exact same thing. They're going to close their schools on Friday because of staffing shortages. So now schools in both Bellevue School District and Seattle will be closed tomorrow and Friday. That also means no remote instruction on Thursday or Friday. Now, Seattle says they're going to make up this day off at some point next year. Bellevue have not quite said what they're going to do yet, or at least I haven't seen an announcement, but I'm presuming that they're going to make up for the lost time next year too. But they also cited, quote, staff shortages, anticipated inclement weather, and COVID-19 restrictions. So it sounds like they're also saying that COVID might have spread or someone caught it and was exposed. I don't buy any of that. To be perfectly clear, this is all about the staffing shortage, period. It's not about weather, and it's not about COVID. Now, they both acknowledge, the officials in both districts acknowledge that this short notice has created some difficult challenges for a bunch of families, but they're not going to do anything about it. Not really. Although Bellevue said, we recognize that this notice may result in the need for childcare for families. Right at school, our partner in providing childcare is on hand to assist those who wish to get quick access to their services. You have to go to their website to learn more. Huh. Oh, no, here it is. They did just announce that January 28th will be the makeup day for Bellevue. Congratulations, kids. You get another day that you didn't necessarily want next year. We're punishing you. What I just find honestly just sort of weird about this, I've now seen stories from King, Q13, and I think Cairo, don't quote me on that last one, covering this, and no one seems to say anything. No one seems to say anything about the absurdity of Friday. No one's saying anything about the clear crisis when it comes to substitute teachers. We did, however, hear talking to King 5, a teacher who said, yeah, this is a problem if you're just going to cancel on Friday classes. And maybe this teacher holds this position because she's also a parent.
I know firsthand what that looks like for a family to have to completely rearrange their schedule. And that was the first thing that every educator in my building today thought of when we got the email from SPS saying that school was canceled on Friday.
So a couple things. Number one, you know, every single one of those educators could choose to come to work on Friday, right? You don't have to take Friday off. You could, in fact, come to work. number two, you know, kudos to her for speaking out, but she's not impacted in the least. She's a teacher and a parent. That means as a teacher, she gets the day off. As a parent, she's actually able to stay home without any interruption to her workday. Thought I'd just mention that. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The coronavirus.
Have we actually hit herd immunity in the state of Washington? I'm told by Dr. Scott Lindquist, who's the state's epidemiologist, that we might have actually reached it now. We're actually potentially at that point.
Our community immunity is rising.
Community immunity is rising. He says the COVID rates remain high. It's somewhat meaningless term in the sense of COVID rates don't equate anything than someone might have a very mild case of COVID. But he says they are still dropping in all age groups, which is obviously good news. And it's happening at a time that he and others are really excited for.
We're right on the cusp of vaccinating a large population of kids. This will definitely help.
Will it definitely help? Will it? Because a lot of these kids have already had COVID. You're pretending otherwise. We know that a lot of kids had COVID. They just never got tested for it. And now we're giving them a vaccine that they may not need. We also know that there is a huge number, nationwide at least, of parents who say they don't plan to give their kid this vaccine, at least not yet. Some 70%, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation, said, yeah, we're not going to do this. So only about 30% are. Now, I don't suppose that the national number is representative of Washington, which is a state that has really leaned into getting vaccinated regardless of consequences, regardless of whether or not you might even need it from a health perspective. You can do what you want. And again, I'm vaccinated. I chose to get it. But I'm wondering if there's a little bit more parental concern in this state and even in the city of Seattle than people are going to acknowledge or feel comfortable acknowledging. I think that's an important part of this. It's one thing for some progressive parent to say they're going to do it to themselves because they think that they'll be okay. The second thing, they might second guess the same choice when talking about their kids. Now, to be fair, there are a lot of progressives who use their kids as sort of human billboards, little human billboards for their own political beliefs. They'll take them to protest. They'll put the pink hat on them. They'll have them hold up a anti-Trump sign, and the kid's 3 years old, has no clue what in the world's going on. So there's no doubt that there are a lot of parents who will jump for this without even talking to their pediatrician. I recommend that people talk to their doctors, whether we're talking about getting kids the vaccine or adults the vaccine. Talk to your doctors. They know you better than Scott Lindquist or anybody else does. But we've been here before where we've been promised, oh, just get to that herd immunity number. It's 70%. And we'll all be fine. Then you can take off those masks. And then we get to that number, and then all of a sudden, the officials say, well, okay, it's not enough. Let's just, you know, come on, we got to get to 80%, and, we'll be good as soon as all the kids get vaccinated. So let's just assume that we get to that point. Let's get to that point. Let's just assume that all the kids who are 5-plus are now vaccinated. Do you think that any of the Democratic governors or the Democratic president decides to get rid of some of the policies? Or do you think that the masks are here forever? Or do you think that the vaccine passport system is here forever? Because it doesn't mean anything anymore to gain herd immunity, especially in the context of knowing that the vaccine's protective power, the efficacy, doesn't seem to last all that long. That's why we're going towards boosters. So we're going to have the conversation about herd immunity for now. We've just hit it or about to hit it. Only to then say, well, we hit a herd immunity, but now there's a new strain of COVID. That means you got to get those booster shots. Let's restart the clock. Let's start from 0% vaccinated. Now, I suppose that's a debate to have when it happens, but it does seem like it's inevitable, especially the way that they're talking about things.
I think we're really on the cusp of being able to turn this fifth wave down.
How many times have we been on the cusp of something only to be told it wasn't enough? Almost every single month this year. Certainly every single quarter this year and towards the tail end of last year. It never ends. I can write this script. So we're very close to nearing the 75% mark for fully vaccinated residents over the age of 12 in the state of Washington. Remember, we're already well above 80% as far as people getting at least one of the shots. And generally speaking, the people who get the first shot end up getting the second shot, so we know it's going to hit that high number. Does the governmental reaction to this, just at least here in Washington State, change at all? Does Inslee say, okay, you can take off those masks? Nothing. So then tell me, what is the point of getting to that herd immunity if, again, we're not actually going to be able to change anything? 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. Listening to the Jason Rant Show. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
Well, for the first time in about six decades, we have a Democrat Secretary of State. And the only way, of course, we get something like that is if we allow someone like Governor Jay Inslee to make that appointment. Now, on the surface, it might seem that State Senator Stephen Hobbs of Lake Stevens is a reasonable choice. He, after all, is a moderate Democrat. But my next guest says, whoa, 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 let's start and look at the big picture here. Joining me on the line is the pride of Puyallup. He's the chairman of the Washington State GOP, Caleb Heimlich. Caleb, welcome back to the show. Your first reaction to this news was what?
Yeah, this is really a blatantly crass political move from Governor Inslee. So he could have chosen any number of people. He claims in his statement, I wanted an independent. Well, he could have picked an actual political independent. There are lots of nonpartisan county elected auditors across the state with elections experience. He could have selected one of them. He said, I want somebody that has experience and can bring people together. Well, he could have chosen one of our living former Secretary of States, Ralph Monroe, Bruce Chapman, Sam Reed, anybody like that. There was any number of people he could pick. But the reason he selected Senator Steve Hobbs was because Hobbs has been an obstacle to Inslee's radical agenda. On issues from the carbon tax to the capital gains income tax, Hobbs was often on the other side voting with Republicans. And so Inslee is counting on the local Democratic Party to appoint a rubber stamp for his agenda to take that Senate seat. And this falls right in line with last year we saw Governor Inslee endorse a progressive challenger to Senator Mark Mullett. Mm-hmm. And so we know Governor Inslee will stop at nothing to get his political agenda through, pushing past norms. Even today, thankfully, the state Supreme Court ruled 7-2 that one of his vetoes, a line item veto, was overreach, executive overreach, and it was unconstitutional. And so that's good. But this is just frustrating that Governor Inslee is playing politics, is using this decision not as an opportunity to select somebody that would be good for the job and would administer elections in a fair manner and inspire voter confidence in our elections, but he used the resignation and stepping away of Kim Wyman as a chance to further his political agenda and his own political ambitions, which is all he seems to care about.
Is this an opportunity to pick up his seat when it's actually up for re-election? I mean, obviously, when looking at Hobbs, he was representing an area that it's more purple at this point than blue, and he was able to get away with it. Is this now, all of a sudden, you get some Seattle-style Democrat that represents the area? It seems like a potential pickup for us long-term.
Absolutely, yes. And that seat will be up next November. And there is a chance, obviously it'll be kind of musical chairs on the Democratic side. They may appoint one of their House members to the Senate seat. And so then we've got a new senator, because Hobbs was relatively popular and he had a moderate voting record on taxes, on other economic issues. And so if you get a radical Seattle Democrat that's just rubber stamping Inslee's session, absolutely the 44th Senate seat is in play. And the House seats are both in play as well. And so that does open up kind of another front in our goal to get back 4 Senate seats and 8 House seats next November. So looking down the road, certainly there is a silver lining of opportunity there. But the concern is what's going to happen this legislative session, because now Inslee could push even further for a carbon tax or other tax bills. And we have 21 Republican senators. oftentimes we've had three moderate Democrats in Mollett, Hobbs, and Vandewedge, and then you just needed one more and you could block bills. And now one of those moderate Democrats that was inclined to oppose the most radical elements of Inslee's agenda is gone, and that that removes that obstacle this legislative session. So that's a big concern.
Is there any Democrat that's coming to mind as a possible replacement that the party would be looking at?
Any Democrat for Secretary of State, you mean?
No, a Democrat to be appointed to Hobbs' position.
Oh,
who do you think that they're even looking at?
I would imagine oftentimes that they would look at the two House members, which would be Representative April Berg and Representative John Lovick, who are both to the left of Senator Hobbs. Aside from that, I'm not sure. But, I mean, typically with an appointment process, you're going to have party faithful making the appointment, and they're going to pick a party line person for that seat.
Well, let's say they went with Lovick, for example, who has weirdly gone further to the left than I thought he would, as someone who's former law enforcement. But let's say they make that move. You generally believe that the Senate seat would be a potential opportunity for Republicans. Well, then Lovick's old seat, is that more? He's more, I think, in line with sort of being out of touch with his district, but he does have great name recognition.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, whether it's Berg or Lovick, you're now introducing a brand new person, and it's essentially an open seat. And so I think there was already an opportunity in the one House seat. I mean, Mark James, who's on the Marysville City Council, ran against April Berg. He got 48%+ of the vote in 2020. So I already felt like we had a good shot to replace Representative Berg next year. Lovick has been there a long time, but I think in a Senate seat where there's a little bit more money spent, because there's four times as many House seats up every election as there are Senate seats. So the Senate seats oftentimes have about four or five times as much spending. So you can really dive into more of those votes. You can dive into how their agenda hasn't fit their constituents. So I think the Senate seat will absolutely be in play, whether it's Lovick or Berg or somebody else. And I think now potentially both House seats, or at least one House seat, absolutely we have a shot. And that's a good chunk of, again, the four Senate seats and the eight House seats we need. And so we'll definitely be very active in the 44th, obviously finally contingent upon redistricting, which hopefully we get those maps next Monday.
So we only have a minute left. Just real quick, Caleb, what does this say for the Secretary of State position under Hobbs? He is still moderate. Do you think he's going to be fair?
I do. I think, I mean, he has a military career. I think he will be a fine in the role. Of course, I'm going to be working hard to find a Republican to run.
For sure.
I think there's a good chance that the Democrats primary him because, I mean, Hobbs has run statewide twice. He ran for lieutenant governor. Well, I should say he ran for lieutenant governor in 2016, lost in the primary because he wasn't liberal enough, and then was running for lieutenant governor in 2020 and then chose to drop out. And then we had the Denny Heck, Marco Elias thing. But all that to say, I wouldn't be surprised if the Democrats push a radical primary challenger to him. And we're certainly working hard to find a capable, qualified Republican to replace him. But in terms of our elections next year, obviously a lot of it is done at the county level. And so that's where we need people monitoring and being involved with the county process.
Yep.
But I don't think in 1 year in the job, Senator Hobbs is going to kind of destroy the secretary or anything like that.
Well, I guess that's the glass half full approach, at least in regards to that appointment. We've been talking with Caleb Heimlich. Of course, he's the chairman of the Washington State GOP. You can learn more at WSRP.org. Caleb, thank you so much for stopping by, as always. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Jason.
Absolutely. You're listening to the Jason Rance Show.
Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Rance Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that. Look at the time. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local. Brought to you by Alpine Specialty Cleaning at alpineclean.com. This is the part of the show where we completely ignore stories coming out of the city of Seattle, and instead, we focus all of our attention on the communities you live in and care about most. And we have a little bit of a theme for this segment. has to do with schools. And we start in Duval, where about 100 or so students over at Cedar Crest High School, they walked out of class yesterday morning, calling on the district to take some sort of action against a student or students, I should say, who were involved in a picture of a Halloween costume or costumes that was deemed insensitive and racist. Now, it's not necessarily racist. It's definitely insensitive. So the photo is out there, and it shows that a student dressed as a police officer resting his knee on the neck of another student in an orange jumpsuit. Now, the knee to the neck certainly would bring up the comparison to George Floyd. The orange jumpsuit part obviously does not. Sounds like this is someone who is a prisoner, but I haven't seen the actual photo because King 5 doesn't want to promote it too much, and I want to actually get some more context. I can see small parts of the photo because they're blurring out the face and they're sort of cutting out the other side. It looks like it's a prison guard or a cop, and it's not on the neck of the other person, even though they say it's on the neck. It's not on the neck. It's clearly on the back. And so King 5, because, again, is all about promoting racial discord. That's what they do. They're claiming that this was an apparent depiction of George Floyd. But again, it's actually, the more I look at it, because it's hard to see the angle, I can't tell if it's on the shoulders or if it's on the lower back because of the way that they cropped this photo. So I don't actually know. But again, it's certainly insensitive in the context of what most people would probably say would cause a stir. So King 5, of course, wants to lean into this because that's what they do. But now students who saw this are upset. So King 5 spoke to alumni over at the school, like Alex, whose brother currently goes to Cedar Crest, and he says he's disgusted to see the photo.
You know, as someone who went to the school, as someone who's lived here for a while, my heart just broke to see something so ugly.
His heart broke. And so he thinks that the school needs to do something.
It's not enough for this to be a one-off and for it to be swept under the rug or dealt with. It needs to be a catalyst for a larger conversation and change.
So a larger conversation and change. What would be the conversation that you're not already having? Because they're very clearly having a conversation. And kudos to them if they're that offended by this Halloween costume, which, again, I'm going to presume was done as a joke, even if it's a bad one. You're having the conversation, so I don't know what more you want out of that conversation, but what kind of action do you think should be taken? Should be a catalyst for some kind of change. What's the change? That people not make jokes that you disagree with? That people not make light of situations in ways that you disagree with? I certainly don't think there are some concepts that people should just be flippant about or incidents, unless, of course, it's in the context of like a stand-up comedy. I think that's different. But what exactly do you want the school to do? The school can't do anything. To be clear, the school can't do anything. This is a photo that was taken off campus. The costumes, presumably, were worn off campus. So the school can't actually do anything unless it wants to violate the law. Now, that's what folks like Alex Sanchez seem to want. Maybe they don't realize that it's against the law, but that's what they want to have happen. They want the school to get involved when they can't. Nor should they. Students get to hold positions you disagree with, even if they're disturbing positions. There are a lot of high school students who hold really horrible positions on concepts of policing and racism in this country, and this country as a whole, how they view it. I disagree with them. They have every single right in the world to do it. Now, you have the right to call them out. And if you feel so compelled to call them out, go ahead, continue to call it out. But calling something out versus trying to get a school to get involved to punish these kids, that is clearly wrong. It's illegal. These kids are going to have to live with the consequences of this photo that they posted. I do think they should get the opportunity actually to explain what was behind it. Maybe it was just about George Floyd. And again, if he wasn't wearing the orange jumpsuit, I probably would have said the same thing. But even just assuming it was about George Floyd, let's actually get the context as to why they did what they did. But instead, we're just saying, well, this is just racism. We can't sweep it under the rug, and we have to do something. We have to punish these kids.
So I think it's really just sent a huge rift in the community, and it's really brought racism to light and what it looks like within the community. And it's really up to school to take some action.
Again, what would you have them do? What would you have them do? And it's weird because despite over 100 students deciding to walk out, and most of those students were white, because according to the school district, they say 75% of the students there are white, less than 1% are black. So most of the students who walked out were likely white. Maybe you have some Latino and Asians mixed in, but for the most part, it's not the black folks, the black kids. So white kids were the ones who walked out. And yet we're told that this is a result, this photo being posted was a result, according to Tony Williams, a child and family therapist who didn't speak to these kids and has no idea what actually happened or why, is implying that it's a lack of diversity that leads to a lack of empathy.
I think the lack of exposure that white students have to other cultural background of students or just persons of color, specifically, is a trickle-down effect in actions such as this. At the end of the day, you get high school students who are teenagers getting ready to be 18 and graduate and go out into society who still have these ideals that this kind of behavior is okay, when in all actuality, you are contributing to the problem and the perpetuation of racism in that system.
Oh, okay, in that system. You see, that's the kind of code word that you can pay attention to and say, yeah, maybe we not ought to listen to this person. Even though one of her points is at least partially accurate, it's just not specifically having anything to do with diversity. Kids, period. 18, 17, 16, whatever it is, they are not at all capable of just going into the real world and being as responsible as you would want them to be as an adult. That's not how it works. That's not how it works. And it's never going to work that way. It's part of the reason why we call them kids, even when they're 18. This has nothing to do with diversity. It has everything to do with their mental intelligence, their life experiences. That's what this is about. Now, is there a racial element to it? Maybe. Again, I'll go with this was a George Floyd issue. I'll go with it just for the sake of argument. But that doesn't mean that these kids are racist. It means they didn't think it through. It means they didn't think it through. And by the way, I've made similar comments about kids who've been involved in anti-Semitic stuff. It's not always intended to be anti-Semitic, the same way it's not always intended to be racist, even if the end result is something that's anti-Semitic or racist. But at the end of the day, I think you go after these kids by criticizing them, if you so feel inclined. And obviously these students do. But don't tell me that the lack of diversity leads to a lack of empathy when you've got all of those students who walked out in support of the very cause that you claim they're contributing to. Doesn't make any sense. Meanwhile, according to Matt Driscoll over at the Tacoma News Tribune, he said that Tacoma Public Schools is considering whether or not they should replace so-called snow days with remote learning. That in a day that you can't go into the school because of literal snow or any kind of, you know, weather event, that instead we just go to all online learning. And there was a poll that was put out, and it, you know, the polls are, I don't necessarily look at any of these polls. I kind of think they're always cheated. But he calls out this idea and says it's a bad one. And I 100% agree. This is maybe the one time that I will agree with Matt Driscoll. Now, maybe not for the same reasons as he is, that he's taking. But this idea that you should be replacing a snow day with a remote learning day, don't do that. Snow days, that is God's way of saying, I'm giving you a break, young child. I'm giving you a break from going to school and learning when your attention is very clearly out in the snow. Kids love snow. Adults love snow. And that's what they're going to be preoccupied with. And so this idea that you're going to take away that enjoyment of the snow, all for what? Remote learning? That's not going to go well because it didn't go well when it wasn't snowing, but definitely not going to go well where they're not going to be paying attention because they're going to be wanting to go outside and play in the snow. So how about we just give that to them? And you know what? You don't have to take your Fridays off after a Thursday holiday. If you're so worried about kids and, you know, if they can't get into the school, we got to make sure that they're learning. Well, you could choose to take one less vacation day at an inopportune time. Or was it too soon for that? Okay, I'll wait to say that on Monday. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. Send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to the Jason Rancho. Welcome back to the Jason Ranch Show on KTTH. Thank you so much for tuning in on this Wednesday. Don't forget, if you miss any moment of the show, that's actually selfish of you. I give my time 3 hours a day just on air. That's not to mention all the hours I spend on the blog, writing for you and putting prep into the show. And you can't even give me 3 hours. That's okay, though. Rather than judge you, I'm giving you an out to the judgment. I will allow you to become a podcast subscriber. Just text the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you a link to my podcast. You can listen to it wherever it is you get your podcasts, including Spotify, Audible, Amazon. We've even got it up on Facebook. An unintentional moment of levity for anyone who was watching the game last night, men's college basketball. It was between the Ohio State Buckeyes and the Akron Zips. I have no idea what that is. I have no idea. I've never heard of that. I've heard of the Buckeyes, never the Zips. In any case, the game was broadcast on ESPN2. And apparently the entirety of the match, or at least a good portion of the game or the broadcast, was getting hit with some pretty intense and brutal technical difficulties. And I know that a lot of people on Twitter started to complain about it and started to call it out because I saw some of the tweets. But the play-by-play host, Jason Benetti, and the color analyst, John Crispin, they were really, really frustrated too. In many of the cases now with sports, there are lots of exceptions, but a lot of them are being done remotely. The play-by-play folks are remote. And they rely on a video feed that they're getting from the stadium to figure out what's going on and call the actual game. A lot of this had to do with COVID. I think now a lot of it has to do with cost savings. And they'll continue to do it unless things like this happen again. But I was talking to someone yesterday who's an engineer who told me that there was a game being broadcast in Seattle, or excuse me, remotely called in Seattle for the national games. And when the power went out, it caused a whole lot of problems. A whole lot of problems. And so it started to break down yesterday for these two play-by-play hosts, or the play-by-play host and the color commentator.
I'd like to tell you what's happening, but that's not currently possible. Akron and Ohio State, 16-15. From Columbus, we are having technical difficulties.
Oh, God bless them. So we don't know exactly what happened behind that technical difficulty versus the one where, like I said, there was a power outage here because of the winds knocking someone off air for a bit. But he ended up obviously doing what he could, but you can't just ignore the problem that's happening. You have to address it. So he just did. But this, it was kind of interesting because I was looking into this guy, and Mediaite had noted that back in July of this year, he had done an interview with a talk radio station, sports station out of Chicago, 670 The Score. And he was really, really annoyed with this new sort of COVID protocol excuse. And he's also, Benetti, is the Chicago White Sox play-by-play host for the TV. And he said, you know, look, I've been forced to stop traveling with the team. I can't go on the road anymore and actually cover the games from the actual stadiums unless they're here in Chicago. And he said, quote, it's cover. It's ridiculous. We, in order to do the job properly, need to be around the team. I don't want to hear anybody say, well, that just adopt it or just adopt to it. We did better than anybody in baseball last year, so bring it on. He, I think, he's 100% correct. You cannot truly cover a team unless you're seeing it in person. relying on a TV screen, that means you're missing the vast majority of what's happening out on the field or on the pitch or on the green or on the rink. You're not able to actually see all that stuff. And it's funny because I watch soccer, as you know. Oh, shut up. I do soccer. Shut up. I like it. And for the Sounders games, they don't send their TV commentators, or I'm presuming also when they're doing it just on the radio, they don't send them on the road. And so they do their setup watching a feed just like everybody else would at home. And they're providing commentary that way. But it's so often where you hear them very clearly not understanding what's going on. And so they're kind of waiting to see what happens, what the referee calls. And then they'll say, oh, yeah, it was a red flag or a red flag, a green card for a green. Oh, my gosh. Pause. Take a breath. It's been a long week and it's only Wednesday. I got it. They sometimes have to pause and wait for a yellow card to be called and a reason to be given. And then they can say, oh, yeah, here's what's happening. They can't see what else is happening off the camera. So it's leading to a poor product. So I don't know how much longer these networks can decide to do this. Again, I know that they're still using the COVID nonsense, but this is about cost saving. You can very easily and safely send these people out. All of them, by the way, pretty sure have to be vaccinated to work for them anyway. Absolute nonsense. As nonsensical as me saying red flag or green card in a segment mentioning soccer. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. The Jason Ranch Show.